Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Ah, man, we're doing it. Happy Sunday morning, Fantasy Sports Today. Lots going on today. Breakfast at Wimbledon. I just watched a couple of psychos play poker for 20 hours straight. Somebody finally won that. I think John Isner might still be playing tennis somewhere against somebody, but realistically, Kevin Anderson is going to play this morning. Played a 6.5 hour match. I'm watching him warm up. Can't imagine how tired he and Djokovic are, and they have to play each other right now. What else? World Cup final coming up in 2 hours. So we'll be on air when that kicks off. And you have me riding the longboard today. So I'm doing Fantasy Sports Today and then Fantasy Football Frenzy with Corey. But today we're going to focus on the AFC West. We'll get to a little bit of Wimbledon, a little bit of NBA, maybe World Cup stuff, probably in third hour. But we're really going to be focused on doing our fantasy football previews today, specifically the AFC West. A week ago today, we were able to do the AFC East for you, switching it over to the West. Got a couple of guys lined up to talk about it, Jim Day, in about 15 minutes or so. And then we have Maurice Moten, who I've never spoken to before, so I'm excited about. And he writes for NFL Spin Zone. He's a Raiders writer, and he'll be ready to go with us in exactly 1 hour. So first of all, I'd like to welcome, while this show is excellently produced by Sean Engel, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Kevin Walsh. How are you, Kevin Walsh?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to get into the AFC West. I mean, this is one of the more interesting divisions. You probably could, you know, I think you'll come across probably all teams have a case made that they end up in first place. At some point, you'll probably see that. There's a lot to like. One of the funny things that I just saw as I was getting ready for today's show just brought me back to Joey Bosa's rookie year. I don't know why. It just kind of came across as I was doing this. And just what a wild situation that was. Like, we had, like, the whole holdout thing. He ended up getting one of the bigger contracts in it. Any rookies kind of ever got. His mom came out and said that they should have pulled an Eli Manning. And then pretty much, I think it was his hamstring held him out, like, first four games or so. And he came back. Yeah. Immediately was phenomenal, was able to hit double-digit sacks. And now, and this isn't really totally related, but everyone sees how good he is, one of the elite pass rushers in football, and nobody is scared to say that his younger brother is better than him and primed to be a top three pick in next year's draft. Just something I came across that I thought was a little wild.
Well, it'd be amazing if his brother was better than him, because Joey has shown up full force in the NFL and been really good. And the Chargers, which we're going to talk about with Jim Day in 15 minutes. So a couple things. First of all, Vegas loved the Chargers last year because they'd been losing so many close games. The roster was getting significantly better. And then, boom, they lose a couple of crazy games again. But the Chiefs were good as well. You know, Chargers, not what they wanted last year, but at the same time, they went 9-7. They came in second place. The Chiefs were a really good team, top to bottom. The thought process is that these things have changed. The Chiefs are now starting an inexperienced quarterback. You have the Chargers, who Vegas has as a minus 145 to make the playoffs. Everybody else is plus money in that division. The Broncos, the highest at plus 325. So clearly Vegas favoring the Chargers. Granted, those odds could have changed in the last week, but they're a week old, so sue me. In any event, Chargers right now considered to be the favorite to win that division. You and I talked about the Pro Football Focus breakdowns of the rosters, and the Chargers are considered one of the best in the entire league.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of that has to do with that defense, I think. I think people are really looking that this could be a defense that, you know, ranks probably top five in football. I know a lot of people Felt like they got maybe the steal of the first round with Derwin James falling to them at 17. So if he comes in right away as a big playmaker and certainly can fit into what they're doing there, it does become one of the more interesting things. I think one of the things with the Chargers that
Football Focus, to clarify, yeah. ESPN published a Pro Football Focus grades on entire NFL rosters. They had the Chargers sixth. So give you a sense of it. So go ahead.
Well, and just on the sense of the roster as a whole, right? And one of the things that I think could scare people off from maybe projecting this team to, you know, finally make the playoffs or and go as far as potentially as, you know, you see a top six roster might go, is they feel like one of these cursed teams, not only losing in heartbreak fashion week after week, but also the injuries. We've already seen, I think, a player that a lot of people had high hopes for this year in Hunter Henry out for the year. So that's one of the things, and I don't know how much you factor it in. I'd actually, you know, be curious, is, you know, is there a situation where you're like, they're cursed, you know, someone's going to go down and I can't buy in, or do you have to kind of go what's in front of you?
Well, I think you just go with what's in front of you. You just eliminate Hunter Henry from the equation. You know, we'll see what their plans are at tight end. We'll talk with Jim about that. They have Virgil Green in that spot right now, and they're just going to have to work around it. Look, they've spent a lot of capital on first-round draft pick wide receivers. They have, Keenan Allen was a third-round draft pick a few years back. Mike Williams is there as well as a first-round draft pick, but he was hurt. You know, my issue with that Mike Williams pick last year was that they have a number one wide receiver who's smallish and has had some significant injuries. They then drafted a guy in the top 10 who is known in college to have a significant injury history. I didn't like that pick for them, but it gives Phil Rivers another weapon right now. And if Mike Williams does stay healthy, there's no doubt in telling you how talented he is, not to mention what Tyrell Williams was able to do when Keenan Allen was out. Plus Travis Benjamin is there as a third or fourth wide receiver. That is a really deep receiving core. You know, Mo Moten, who we're going to have on in an hour, said on Twitter that he thinks the Raiders have the best wide receiving core in the league. And one of the teams that would probably submit themselves from a depth standpoint is the Chargers. Now, granted, with Cooper and Nelson and Martavis Bryant, that's a lot of top-end talent. But some people might say Jordy's on the backside of his career, and Martavis Bryant has never really proven it year over year, which he hasn't. So, you know, good receiving core here for the Chargers. But really wanted to get your sense, too, before we get too deep into the Chargers specifically. Mm. You know, what are your expectations for this division in general?
I mean, they're a division, I think, that has three playoff team potential. You know, it's each team has, I feel like, a massive question mark surrounding it, right? For the Raiders, it's John Gruden. For the Chiefs, it's Pat Mahomes. And for the Broncos, it's probably some combination of Vance Joseph and Case Keenum. There's probably some combination there as to which one you're more curious over. Maybe it is both. So they have that type of potential. It's you know, again, it would be a matter of them seizing it. I think one of the things you'll see as we continue to go through these projections is what feels like a massive gap in depth of true contenders from the AFC to the NFC. But what could perhaps close that gap is if some of these things hit in this AFC West, because I do think that this still has that potential to be the best division in football. I think heading into last year, a lot of people looked at it as that, and I think that's totally fair. I don't know if that is the same sentiment offered coming into this season, but I think they still hold that type of potential.
Well, two of the most compelling storylines in the entire NFL as we go into the 2018 season do reside here in the AFC West. The hiring of John Gruden by the Raiders, turning over that organization with a still young quarterback and a young superstar, potential superstar wide receiver, as well as Khalil Mack and other players that we can get into in an hour. That's a big storyline, obviously. He was a very expensive hire. He's a unique hire. He's a Vermeil-esque hire in that he was out of the game for a long time, coming back in. I'm not of the opinion that he was much of a superstar head coach in the first place. He won a Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team. To the victor goes the spoils. He gets the ring, but he didn't really do much beyond that as a head coach. very good offensive mind. No denying that. Maybe that's what they need at this time because there was a little bit of a regression from that top-end offensive talent last year. So that's storyline number one. Storyline number two is Pat Mahomes. It's a big, obviously, change for them. This plan was set in place last April of 2017, when they decided to make the move up in the draft in order to get Pat Mahomes. Alex Smith knew he was on his way out. He wasn't going to be a placeholder anymore. He's in Washington now. But Pat Mahomes, it's a big bet. The Big 12 quarterbacks have not done particularly well in the NFL, but he's going to get a shot. There are obviously moments where you're like, wow, this guy is an unbelievable gunslinging quarterback, and he might take this Chiefs offense to the next level with Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and Travis Kelce and Kareem Hunt. When you talk about, you talked about the Raiders receiving core, you want to just talk about that top-end starting talent, Watkins opposite Hill and Kelce with Hunt behind them. That's pretty impressive. If Pat Mahomes is on their level, that's going to be a really good offense, correct?
Well, absolutely, right? And if you were to add, you know, to the offensive personnel, having Andy Reid there would be a boost. I have to admit, and I'm a big Andy Reid guy. I think that he's been one of the more underrated coaches year after year because of the playoff struggles. People don't typically, I feel, give him the credit that he deserves. He's still been one of the better coaches. But last year was a difficult season for him. They got off to that unbelievable start. Again, of course, with that massive game against New England week one. They were rolling 5-0. And then they really, really, really struggled. And it got to the point where he had to turn over the play calling duties to Matt Nagy. I think it was a 3-game stretch where they played the Giants, the Bills. And I think there was one other team within that stretch where they were really struggling, especially the Giants in that Bills game. I think it was 9 they put up on the Giants in overtime and then only 10 up against Buffalo. And he had to turn the play calling over to Matt Nagy, who got them back on track. I think his first game calling the plays, they put up 31 against the Jets. They still lost. But then he kind of held things down for them up until that last game of the year, the Denver game, where Andy Reid took it over, I think, to call plays for Pat Mahomes. But the problem is that opportunity, is that going to be a situation that they need again? Is Andy Reid going to have to turn over play calling duties again? I worry a bit in that regard because typically, again, having Andy Reid as the head coach would be a massive plus, especially for a young quarterback. But now I'm not as sold on that idea.
Yeah. Full disclosure, Kevin is a lifelong Eagles fan, so that's why he's in love with Andy Reid. I do happen to agree with him on his point. I feel at times Andy Reid is somewhat overlooked because of his inability to manage the clock and those playoff struggles. But I think most people within NFL circles understand how good of a coach Andy Reid is. And there's a reason he's been a head coach for an extremely long period of time in the NFL. I mean, he's in the midst of a really good run as a head coach as far as length of time, length of service, albeit with two different franchises. So to Kevin's point about the Chiefs, they were 5-0 last year, then dropped 6 of their next 7, pretty crazy, and then won their last 4. So they ended up 10-6, and then that game against the Titans is going to haunt them because they were badly outplaying the Titans, and it completely got away from them in the second half. And it was just a really bad way for Alex Smith to go out, for them to end their season, but maybe indicative of what a kind of a wacky season they had, where it was good early and then bad late, even though it doesn't exactly line up. Go ahead.
I do feel like what was one of the weirder things, right? I mean, listen, things are never as simple as perhaps they seem, but it really felt that the entire season last year broke down to how many times did they give Kareem Hunt the ball. It really, you know, when he got X number of carries, there was just a certain level of production that this team was able to reach last year. And I think that was part of the reason that they ended up turning things over, and they just kind of got back to that. And the coach who's stepping in for Matt Nagy, he's now the head coach over in Chicago, Eric Bieniemy, is a promotion from the running backs coach. So I do think one of the things for this team is their focus going to be the run game and then kind of working out from there? Because there is a lot, as you mentioned, talent, though, in the pass game. Obviously, Kareem Hunt is a capable pass-catching running back. But, I mean, Travis Kelce is one of your top three tight ends for sure. And then Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins is a really nice 1-2 punch, especially for a guy like Pat Mahomes, who few people, if any, can outrun his deep ball in all of football. And I think Watkins and Hill are going to find out.
Agreed. So, obviously, a lot of good storylines there. We will get to the Broncos as well. I think the Broncos are not my favorite team in this division, let's put it that way. I think due to the fact that the Chargers are getting better and the Chiefs are still a pretty talented team, the Broncos could be in for a rough situation here. They have a new offensive coordinator in Bill Musgrave. He's obviously been in the league for a long time. Mike McCoy was relieved of his duties in the middle of the year last year. Defensive coordinator Joe Woods and Vance Joseph in his second year. It's rare to see guys on their hot seat going into their second year, but if this goes south for the Broncos and they end up with another last place finish, you have to think John Elway is going to have kind of an itchy trigger finger when it comes to looking at a new head coach. So 5-11, disappointing last year. I don't think the roster, I don't know if they're being honest about the totality of the roster here. But we'll see if Case Keenum can get them back on track. They obviously had pretty miserable quarterback play throughout the year last year with several players, but we will see if he can get them back on track. And obviously we'll get deeper into the Broncos and Chiefs a little bit later, but the Chargers are next with Jim Day. So lots of good storylines today, both in the AFC West, and if we can get to Wimbledon, which has started with Kevin Anderson and Djokovic, and if we can get to the World Cup, which will be decided between France and Croatia, starting at 11 Eastern, then we will. But it's a good action-packed show. 3 hours of fun, couple of hours worth of football to get it started. Looking forward to talking about Chargers, Chiefs, Broncos, and Raiders next on FST. It's myself and Kevin Walsh until 12 Eastern. Join us after the break.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, Will Fu, on your Sunday morning. Hopefully you're joining us via the Fantasy Sports Radio app, but if not, if you're on TuneIn or iHeartRadio, we appreciate it. You can reach out to us today on Fantasy Sports Radio at FNTSY Radio. You can be you can catch up with me at Mike Blewett and Kevin at The Kevin Walsh. If you want to give us a call today about any of the AFC West projections or previews that we're giving you, please do so by calling 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. And I'm bringing in right now one of my good friends in fantasy football. He and I were doing podcasts, I want to say 8 or 9 seasons ago, back on another platform a long time ago. It seems like a lifetime ago, but here we are, happy to talk with my friend Jim Day. You can find him on Twitter at Fantasy Taz. He's very involved in doing a lot of he did a lot of draft masters for Scott Fishbowl, which is off and running right now. And he's a Fighting Chance fantasy writer. And you can go to fightingchancefantasy.com in order to find his latest. So, Jim, first of all, thanks for being here. Great to talk to you again.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, you know, you previewed it a little bit yesterday on Twitter by saying it's an interesting dynamic. You know, over the years, there are certain guys in fantasy football that you sort of scratch your head and wonder why it is that people don't elevate them in their fantasy rankings. At wide receiver, you have guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Golden Tate come to mind, where people just don't quite want to draft them where they probably should be. And with running back, it's Frank Gore. People trying to get out a year early when Frank Gore just keeps rushing for 1,000 yards. But a quarterback, for a long time, it's been Phil Rivers. Maybe it's the penchant to throw interceptions. Maybe it's a lack of NFL success, playoff success. But to your point, Phil Rivers is often overlooked.
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about a guy who only once in his starting career didn't finish as a top 12 quarterback, you know, in basic fantasy settings. Like, you know, crazy leagues, of course, have different settings. But, you know, in a basic standard league, he's been a top 12 quarterback every season he started except one, and that was back in 2012. This year, he's coming off the board right now, currently as the 15th quarterback taken, behind some very unproven guys like Pat Mahomes and, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo and things like that. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. This is a guy who's coming off a top seven season last year. You know, they took a little bit of a hit losing tight end Henry Hunter for the season, but he's got should be improved O-line this year with the addition of Mike Pouncey and last year's rookie that didn't get a chance to play too much and should be back at guard this year. So I'm really liking his chances to bounce back and, you know, put up big numbers. And again, he's just being drafted way too low.
Jim, if you had to give some credence to the side, though, that might be low on Phillip Rivers, and look, I tend to agree with you, he is undervalued. Could they at least make the argument that his most important pieces are injury-prone guys? Keenan Allen, obviously, we know his injury history, as you mentioned, already missing Hunter Henry. The offensive line doesn't always seem to stay fully intact. So could you offer some credence to that, or still, this is a guy that, no matter what, needs to be one of the first 12 quarterbacks picked?
I think he's one of the first 12 quarterbacks that should be picked every year. I'm sorry. I mean, you're talking about over the last 5 years. Let's look at some of his averages. He's averaged over 585 attempts a year. He's averaged over 4,450 yards a year, and he's averaged a little over 30 TDs a year. You know, those are top 12 numbers across the board. And, you know, to take some of these younger guys that people think have the upside over a guy who's just proven it year in and year out, you know what, it just makes it that much easier for me to grab him late.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking about it yesterday as Jim and I were just kind of chatting over social media. I won two Dynasty League titles, a pretty competitive league that Jim founded, by the way, and with Phil Rivers at quarterback. Now, granted, it's a pretty deep league and quarterback is somewhat de-emphasized, but I never had any problems at quarterback because Phil Rivers was always there putting up numbers. This is a league that's, I think, in its seventh season, and I never really had any issues whatsoever with it. But in any event, I think we've hammered the point home. I'll take Phil Rivers over the unproven guys like Garoppolo and in some instances, Deshaun Watson. I think the Texans might have to throw a lot this year, but you know, I just like the proven guys versus somebody having to come back off an ACL like Watson, Mahomes, who hasn't done anything yet, and Jimmy Garoppolo, who had a very short window of success. But let's move on to the running back position. I don't think there's too much you need to say about it because Melvin Gordon put up a big year last year, and he is coming off the board. He's probably the eighth running back I'm seeing right now, according to Fantasy Pros, coming off the board. So I think people are respecting it, but give me your sense of if you think he can repeat what he did last year, any kind of regression or positive increase in his stats going into this season.
No, he's definitely the bell cow in this offense. You know, you're talking about a guy who touched the ball over 330 times last year. You know, I think we see sort of those same numbers. They're looking at him to be the guy every down as much as they can. You know, he's coming off a season where he caught 58 balls, had 83 targets. You know, you got to love those kind of numbers for a running back. You just do. And, you know, while he's definitely the bell cow there, you had Austin Ekeler behind him who had a decent season in the limited time he had. He had five touchdowns, almost 600 yards total offense. He did something. And then they grabbed the rookie Justin Jackson in the seventh round in this year's draft. And, you know, what people don't realize that if Gordon does go down with any kind of injury, then it's going to be, I think, Justin Jackson taking that role as the main back, with Austin Ekeler still being the, you know, expansion back, as you were. So, you know, don't sleep on Justin Jackson. Right now he's not being drafted in most any league, and he's definitely a guy, especially in best ball, I would take as a late-round flyer.
Let me piggyback off that then. I mean, do you think that there's any chance Justin Jackson could cut into Melvin Gordon's workload a bit? Again, you mentioned the bell cow, certainly, but it's not been super efficient. He's yet to even get to 4 yards per carry within his first three seasons. So could they give some carries to Justin Jackson and then they lower that workload for Melvin Gordon? Maybe there's a little bit more efficiency for him there.
Well, it's always a possibility, but I don't think it's going to be enough at any point while Gordon's still healthy to warrant Jackson being a fantasy viable running back before that. You know, we may see Justin Jackson get, you know, 4 to 6 carries a game if Gordon's healthy, but definitely not enough to cut into anything.
How about wide receivers? So Keenan Allen right now, 6th wide receiver coming off the board. Obviously, he led the league last year in some key categories at the receiver position, so a really fantasy boom last year. But you got Mike Williams, who's coming, trying to come back for a healthy season, and you got Tyrell Williams there as well, who people are they're ranked right next to each other on Fantasy Pros, 59 and 60. So part of your depth chart, but not anywhere in the wide receiver 3 range. So do you expect either one of them to distance themselves and become a clear number 2?
I expect Mike Williams to clearly distance himself. I like Tyrell Williams, don't get me wrong. And in late rounds, he's definitely a good flyer. But I think Mike Williams, I mean, when you look into last year's draft, a lot of people considered him the best wide receiver in that draft. And then he just wasn't healthy. He missed all of offseason, missed the first month of the year, just didn't get going at any time. Now he's, you know, supposed to be fully healthy. And if he's fully healthy, we're going to see what he can do, especially with Keenan Allen on the other side taking most double teams away. I really like Mike Williams to have a solid year this year. And where he's being drafted, like you said, is not really a viable wide receiver 3. I won't be surprised at all if he's easily a wide receiver 3 by the end of the year, maybe even creeping up into wide receiver 2 numbers. This kid is a monster when he's on the field.
So I actually want to bring in a caller, and it is our good friend, a guy that we did the podcast with many years ago, Jim, and it's Tony Sincotta.
Yo, this is like old times.
Blog Talk Radio days.
Yes. Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, we put them out of business, I think. here's the thing. San Diego's interesting, but I'll tell you what, based on the drafts, I think the Raiders in this division are the most interesting. I mean, those wide receivers are all dropping down drafts. Who's truly going to be their running back? And I'm not convinced anymore that Carr is a top-flight NFL caliber quarterback. I don't know if he's the future of the Raiders.
Yeah, well, I would say, and I'd throw it back to Jim. Jim, I would say that this Chargers receiving core is kind of the one on the come. We already know that Allen is who he is, but you made a big point about Mike Williams. I love the depth that they have with Tyrell Williams and Travis Benjamin there. It doesn't mean that Travis Benjamin is immediately fantasy relevant, but depth behind their top-end talent is pretty impressive, no?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they have 4 solid NFL wide receivers on this team, and you got to love that, especially as Kevin was saying before. You know, you got to worry a little bit about Keenan Allen playing all 16 games. Of course, at this point, we have no idea if Mike Williams can play 16 games. So you definitely like to see them have that depth behind that.
Tony, while you're there, then I wanted to just to ask you, because we started off, we were talking about Phillip Rivers, and I know you know, Tony always does a good job of telling people why they're stupid, and Jim was just making a great point that every year people try and get cute with it, and they end up overvaluing unproven guys or riskier guys, and they let Phillip Rivers fall through the cracks. So do you agree, kind of consensus here, that Phillip Rivers is a guy that needs to be certainly one of the first 12 quarterbacks taken, if not higher?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of anti-Christian sentiment out there against Phillip Rivers, I think.
You think it's an anti-Catholic movement?
Yeah, that's the problem.
I'm sure
he's a nice guy. Well, he had 9 kids, 1 wife, and I think that people are, you know, hold that against him. Why? Do you have a better reason why you wouldn't pick the guy in the top 12? I mean, he throws the ball 40 times a game. Every year he's consistently there. I got nothing better. That's what I'm going with.
Jim, I'll throw that to you.
Everybody we'll wants a shiny new toy.
I agree. That's a lot of what it is. So people are like, I'm done with Larry Fitzgerald and he catches 100 balls a year. I'm done with Phil Rivers. He's just been there forever. It's like, well, yeah, he's been there forever, and he probably throws a few too many interceptions, but he's also throwing the ball. For the last several years, he's been throwing the ball a lot to keep the team in the game. Now that the rest of the roster has kind of caught up to his talent level, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and I'll make a transition to you, Jim, on this, it puts him in an even better position because this team might be winning some more games. So I actually wanted to transition to that. The defensive side of the ball, they're sort of loaded now. We've been waiting for a couple of years for this all to come together. Now they have a top-flight guy in Joey Bosa on the first line of defense. They got Ingram pass rushing as well, along with Denzel Perryman at middle linebacker. You got Casey Hayward there, who everybody loves. Jason Verrett, who's a former first-round draft pick, suffered some injuries. And then Derwin James slots in. So let me ask you from an IDP standpoint, Bosa seems like he's at the top of the list, but then who are you going for after that?
Well, I really like Denzel Perryman at their weak side position. I think he definitely has a chance to put up some solid numbers this year. And, you know, of course, Melvin Ingram, you know, a lot of talk about Joey Bosa, but Melvin Ingram is still a top defensive end in this league, so I wouldn't sleep on him. You know, they got some nice backfield cornerback duo of Casey Hayward and Jason Verrett. You know, these are guys that definitely score. You know, they're not going to be top cornerbacks, but they're going to put you in a quarterback two, quarterback three range. And, you know, I like Jahlil Adlai as the strong safety. He's got a chance in this defense to put up, you know, close to 80 tackles.
How do you feel then, Jim, about the safety playing next to him, the rookie Derwin James? We heard a lot of great things about him entering last year's college football season. He fell all the way down 17, and then the second he was picked, everybody's like, that's an absolute steal. He could certainly, I think, end up having a very productive season, rookie or not.
Well, look, the only thing about him is that they're probably going to use him mostly in the free safety position. Mm. And one of the things we found in IDP is that free safeties don't often score as well as the strong safeties. So, you know, he's going to be out there, he's going to make plays, but it's going to really be contingent on how many big plays he can make to whether or not he can be a fantasy-relevant scorer.
Yeah. Let me throw this to both of you. Tony, you can answer this one first. With Hunter Henry out, does that eliminate the tight end position as being of any value on this team, or does Virgil Green kind of slot in and become a sneaky tight end too?
Yeah, I think anytime you're looking at the tight end position, 8 through 15, you probably got a point and a half that separates anything. So I wouldn't say I want to eliminate them, but I wouldn't be looking to draft that. I think it gives an opportunity if San Diego's offensive line, which did get better in the offseason, can hold up blocking, that they go to more three wide receiver sets.
Jimmy,
and I'll agree with Tony on the three wide receiver sets. It makes no sense not to with the wide receivers they have. Virgil Green is still thought of as a blocker. He's not really going to be fantasy relevant. I think the fantasy relevant tight end that they're going to have this year isn't on the squad yet. Whether they go back to Antonio Gates or they wait till somebody gets dropped from another team, they're going to look to add somebody because Rivers likes to throw to his tight end. We've seen that year in, year out. They're going to get him somebody to throw to. It's not anybody currently on the roster right now.
So yeah, to give everybody a sense of what – sorry, Kev, I'll go right to you in a second. To give everybody a sense of what happened with their offensive line during the offseason, Russell Okung has been there. Mike Pouncey, though, they signed from Miami during the offseason. And then Forrest Lamp, who was their early second-round draft pick in 2017, tore his ACL last training camp, so he barely played. So they're effectively adding two new players to this offensive line and considered upgrades from what they have. So – it's good news for Melvin Gordon, Phillip Rivers, and the like, in my estimation. I think they'll grade pretty high in offensive line rankings. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I just wanted to go off that tight end point. Then, fantasy wise, would you, if you had to, you know, pick one of the situations, would you prefer to see Antonio Gates come back and at least the rapport is there, and they can, I guess, focus on that connection and he's the guy, or maybe the upside of a Virgil Green, and maybe because, as you said, Rivers does like his tight end. So, Jim, would you rather see Gates come back or see if there's something there with Virgil Green?
I'd much rather see Gates come back. Virgil Green's a blocker. That's what they use him for. That's what they've used him for since he's come into the league. You know, I don't see that changing pretty much at all. You know, we're talking about a guy, I think his most productive year was less than 250 yards, less than 25 receptions. It's just not – I just don't see him as a viable tight end at any shape or form. I think, you know, if they go out and get Gates, I think that would be wonderful for Rivers, and I'm sure he'd be excited. But, you know, there's another guy in Dallas that looks to be cut from Dallas, Enrico Gethers, that would be another good, strong option. He's definitely a pass-catching tight end that they could use. So be wary of guys like that, because those are the guys that are going to end up on this team.
So I'll go rapid fire. Tony, you think the Chargers win this division?
Yep, 11-5.
Jim, thoughts?
Actually, I like them a lot to win this division. Yeah, I agree. They made a nice charge at the end of last year to finish 9-7. I think they can unseat the Chiefs this year.
Yeah, the schedule's not that brutal either. Vegas loves them, has them well in front of the other teams in this division. Thank you, Tony, for giving us a call. If you want to follow Jim Day on Twitter, he's one of the best follows out there for fantasy football. So go to @FantasyTaz, T-A-Z. He's going for Fighting Chance. He's writing for Fantasy, Fighting Chance Fantasy Writer. That's FightingChanceFantasy.com. Jim, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Right now on the music front, Little Foo. Foo Fighters are at Madison Square Garden tomorrow and Tuesday, and they are my favorite band. And I don't think I can go.
Why?
It's killing me.
Why can't you go?
Because I'm going to see Dave Matthews on Wednesday, and I'm father of two young kids, and going to concerts on consecutive nights is sort of frowned upon.
I don't know.
I would say,
I can't.
Well, I know. I would go for it. I'm married to someone that says maybe I don't go for that because I'm going to a concert on Wednesday. What?
Did you ask?
Oh, I asked.
Oh.
I'm still negotiating. Life is a negotiation, Kevin.
you're looking over to send maybe a couple first round pick swaps and see what else you have to.
The mid-level exception. You know, I'm trying to create some cab room. And we'll see what happens, but. I might be capped out.
Oh, man.
It's going to be a little difficult. But I should say happy birthday to my daughter. She's 3, so she doesn't know what the heck I'm talking about or what I'm doing when I wear this headset. But happy birthday to Carson. So
happy birthday, Carson.
She is 3 years old. Thank you. Carson Jane, and she turned 3 on Friday, and we had a big party yesterday. It's why I couldn't be on air yesterday. There's a lot of planning, to be honest, and normally I wouldn't take off for a kid's birthday party, but, you know, I kind of had to help the fam with this effort, and it was a lot of fun. We had family and friends over, and she enjoyed all of her presents and her strawberry cake and all that kind of stuff. So, anyway, good times yesterday. And good times on that last segment. So Jim and Tony and I used to do a podcast together on Blog Talk Radio. I think our first season was the 2009 season. Wow. It's kind of how I broke into this business with those guys doing a podcast. It was Tony and I, and then Jim joined us a couple of weeks into the season, and we crushed it. Tony was hosting, and Jim and I were going back and forth on analysis. We would do it every Wednesday night. It was a lot of fun. It was the early days of podcasting. You would just pick up your phone, dial into this number. It kind of was a conference call. It didn't have necessarily the best sound quality, but it was cool. It was like how I found out, how I learned about podcasting and how some people, frankly, learned what a podcast is. I would tell people I do a podcast and be like, I don't even know what that is. Like, think about that now, how ubiquitous podcasts are. And 10 years ago, people didn't even know what it was. 9 years ago. I would say to people, I do a podcast, and they're like, I don't even know what that is. What are you talking about? I'm like, you just go to iTunes, or you go to Blog Talk Radio if you want to listen live, or you go to iTunes, or you know, just download it and listen. They're like, is it free? I'm like, yeah, it's free. I would literally have to describe to people what a podcast is when I said I did a podcast, which for people that were doing it at the same time as me, understand it. But to say it to people now, they're like, seriously? And but that's true. And I'm sure you're thinking that, like, seriously, you had to describe that to people because you grew up with that. So, what's that?
I didn't really realize that. I don't know when podcasts became a thing in a way. So, like, I'm not that surprised by it.
I read an article in Sports Business Journal a couple of months ago about the podcast revolution. And Bill Simmons was a really central figure in it. And as far as sports podcasts are concerned, he was really the first one to get a popular one, but they tell about the early days of ESPN doing it. And like Chad Ford, who was their NBA senior writer at the time, had Danny Ainge on for a podcast, and Bill Simmons heard it and was like, hey, I need one of these things. And they gave it to him. It was the BS Report, and it took off. And I remember listening to a couple of those, and within months I was doing one. And then a few months later, Adam Carolla was doing it, and I listened to his podcast religiously for years, just as a, you know, comedic thing and you know, kind of fun thing to listen to. But obviously it's exploded, and sports podcasts are just a really small sliver of it. You and I probably listen to many of them religiously, but it's just a small sliver of the podcast world. You know, news and NPR and those other types of podcasts are extremely popular, far more popular than some sports podcasts are. But anyway, little history lesson on podcasting. Didn't mean to get into that, but it made me think about it a lot because Jim Day and Tony and I, that was the early days of me doing this kind of stuff. Yeah.
If,
it was a lot of fun. I was doing it in my apartment in Brooklyn with my then, my then girlfriend, who became my fiance, became my wife. They weren't even engaged yet when I started doing that. So it's a lot to think about all that's happened in the last 9 years.
Wonderful stuff. If
you had a question.
Yeah, if we're gonna roll on the Chargers stuff still, which I believe we are, I believe this is the plan, I kind of want to go off that tight end thing because it's super interesting. Yep. And just during the break, I looked up, I guess, what could be three possible scenarios. I don't know how likely two of them are. I know one of them's been discussed. And if I could just go one by one and just get your opinion on how you would feel if they went that direction. I guess we would start with the most likely scenario of them bringing Antonio Gates back. How would you feel about that?
It's one of those things that it almost just makes way too much sense. You wonder why it hasn't happened already. Maybe he's just saying, look, I'll come back, but I'm not doing training camp, which I'm sure they would be okay with. We've seen this many times in the past where veteran players are like, hey, man, I can't do training camp. I remember when the Giants, back in 2006, the Giants were basically saying, I want to make sure I got the year right. But Strahan was kind of like done. Michael Strahan was at the end of his career. He'd played like 13, 12 years, and he was done. And the Giants are like, we just need you for one more year. And he's like, all right, but I'm not doing training camp. And like, you know, it was said off the record, and it wasn't publicized. But they're like, okay, like, we'll see you in August. So he didn't have to do any of that kind of nonsense and go away to Albany, which the Giants used to do. They don't do anymore. Most of the teams don't. A lot of the teams don't travel anymore. They don't go to like a college town or whatever, and they only go do it for like 3 weeks. In any event, he didn't do it, and he came back, and he was in shape. He was in good enough shape, and they won the Super Bowl. And he didn't even really do training camp. So there's a lot of players that get those concessions at the end of their career. I would imagine Antonio Gates has done quite a bit for the San Diego Chargers, and they'll grant him that. Like, you don't have to go do the two-a-days, which aren't the two-a-days of old, but nonetheless, they still have them. So it almost makes too much sense. I think you probably won't even hear about him for another couple of weeks. He'll say, you know, they'll sign him maybe at the start or middle of training camp or into August, and they're probably testing, making sure he's condition tested and all that kind of stuff. You know, Antonio Gates has obviously put on weight over the years. He's not in the shape that he was 8 years ago because he's had foot injuries. And, you know, I think it's been difficult for him to stay in peak athletic shape over the last few years. People have made jokes about him putting on weight and, you know, how big is he going to get? He's the size of an offensive lineman now. But look, if you have foot injuries and you can't work out to the level that you previously did, then that's why stuff like that is going to happen. Ultimately, I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm sure Phil Rivers would like him there as a safety blanket, and it would probably help to be a complement to Virgil Green.
Door number two, an option that is 8 years younger and is also a free agent, is Kobe Fleener. Now, this is a guy who I don't know how interested people really are in him. I know that there are still some concerns, I believe, with him surrounding concussions, but also a free
serious
agent.
Serious concerns, not just concerns, like serious concerns,
yeah,
to the
sure.
point where he a couple of weeks ago, he was like, I still don't feel 100%. Mm. So that's a long time to be dealing with post-concussion syndrome. That's 7 months. So
the door number two closed.
If it's open for him and the doctors say it's open, yeah, I think you have an option there.
Fantasy-wise, would you rather Gates or Fleener?
Gates is more reliable.
Okay.
Kobe Fleener drops ball a fair amount. He fumbles. And
I think Rivers would.
I think the Colts were. The Colts, despite his close relationship with Andrew Luck, I think the Colts were like, see ya. They weren't unhappy to see him go.
The Colts. That takes us to door number three. And my favorite scenario, which means it absolutely will not happen because I've just completely made it up right now, but I doubt it has any chance of happening. But what if they traded for Eric Ebron? They have Jack Doyle. He certainly should be their number one tight end. We know the Colts are in the business of accruing assets to fight, despite the fact that Andrew Luck is coming back. And the Chargers can do it in a way where it's not a worry that they're anticipating Hunter Henry still being their tight end of the future because they can cut bait of Eric Ebron the following season, no problem. Or he could then become a very nice trade piece. And I would personally say he would be the best of the bunch. Would you agree?
Yeah, but I don't see the Colts doing that. They've tried to employ the two tight end sets for a while. In the past, it was Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen. Mm. Now I think they're finally happy to have Jack Doyle, a reliable tight end option who's been on the team for 5 years, and Eric Ebron, another veteran in there. I think they like the two tight end set that they're going to get out of the Ebron. I mean, the Ebron signed in the offseason, so yeah. I don't rule it out. If somebody gives you a big option or a really good trade offer, then I think you consider it. And I'm sure the Chargers are exploring those options, unless we already know Gates is in. But it depends what the offer would be. You know, they have behind those guys, you know, not a lot. Mo Alley Cox, do you remember him from VCU, the basketball player?
Really don't.
Don't? From Virginia Commonwealth? He was a really good player. Anyway, Mo Alley Cox is a really good player for VCU. They signed him as an undrafted free agent, so they're trying to convert yet another basketball player into a tight end, and he is the type of guy that has the look of a tight end. People used to say that about him during his senior season at VCU, like this guy is probably likely to be a football player as opposed to a basketball player, and he's trying to make that conversion. But they don't have a lot of experience behind them, behind Doyle and Ebron. So I think they'll go with the two tight end set. There's been questions about the depth of the pass catching behind T.Y. Hilton. They signed Ryan Grant as an unrestricted free agent. They obviously signed Eric Ebron. Chester Rogers is there. They drafted Deion Kane. So those names aren't jumping off the page. I know people like Chester Rogers as a sneaky play. I would say Ryan Grant is kind of a sneaky late pick as well, because the Colts could be trailing in a bunch of games and Luck could chuck the ball around. But I think they're going to need – I don't love Eric Ebron as a player, to be honest. I don't know. Some people like Ebron more than Doyle. I would pick Doyle over Ebron. But that would not be wise – not be advisable of the Colts to do that. But an interesting exploration. Jim mentioned Rico Gathers from – you know, former Cowboy or current Cowboy. So that's a possibility, I suppose. Yeah, there's talks of him being cut. He was a former basketball player. He was a sixth round pick in 2016. So we'll see if that's an option. They drafted a tight end in the fourth round this year. And so they're not going to keep four tight ends on the roster. Maybe one of those guys is a trade option. I could see that if Antonio Gates isn't already lined up.
I think the receiving core then, just again, based on the conversation that we had, Mike Williams really could end up being one of the steals of fantasy football drafts, because if you look at the way the targets and kind of just the workload was broken up amongst all pass catchers, anyone that could emerge as a distant second option behind Keenan Allen, because I would anticipate Keenan would still stay comfortably ahead of even, Mike Williams, probably on his best day. But if you do look at the targets, the way they went last year, Melvin Gordon had 83, then it was Tyrell Williams for 69, Hunter Henry for 63, Travis Benjamin for 64, Antonio Gates for 52. So it's kind of just, a large grouping together of similar target shares, nobody really separating. And the touchdowns, again, it was very similar. Keenan Allen had the 6, Tyrell Williams with 4, Hunter Henry with 4, Travis Benjamin with 4, Melvin Gordon with 4, Gates and Ecker had 3 apiece there. There's a lot to go around with Phillip Rivers as the guy, and I especially think touchdown-wise, Gates should probably be brought back, but if he's not, I mean, between Henry and Gates right there, that 7 touchdowns, and we know Mike Williams is a bigger body, not a tight end body, but at least he has height to him to where he could certainly be a red zone option. Just based off that conversation we had, looking at the numbers, it could be prisoner of this very moment, but I feel like right now, I want to see if Mike Williams is available in my Scott Fishbowl, and I want to get him at my very, very next pick.
Yeah, look, the guy's got real bad injury history, in my opinion. I was surprised that the Chargers picked him where they picked him. He's a talented dude, and I think it's a risk-reward situation for him. I have questions about I wonder if Phil Rivers' passing volume would stay up there around 575, but I wouldn't think it would drop significantly enough for you to be concerned about it. Mm-hmm. But clearly, Mike Williams barely played last year. So, yeah, if you asked me who should lead, all else equal, ceteris paribus, to borrow a Latin term, who's going to be second in receptions this year? It should be Mike Williams.
Yeah,
he should have more than Melvin Gordon's 58. Keenan Allen could stay up around 100, but where does that suck the other catches away from? Hunter Henry's 45, Antonio Gates is 30. Some tight end's going to have catches there. Virgil Green had 14 last year. You want to double or triple his output, conceivably? I mean, Hunter Henry, he played 14 games last year. 12 games last year. He only had 45 catches. As much as I like him, as much as people liked him, he wasn't super productive. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
Yeah. I want to just quickly make one point on the offensive line, because you mentioned that it's much improved. And if I could just read this excerpt quickly from the rankings that Pro Football Focus recently put up of their top offensive lines. It says, a lot of projection here with Feeney and Forrest Lamp entering year 2, as well as Mike Pouncey, but it's impossible to think things could be worse than where they were last year. Kenny Wiggins allowed the most pressures of any guard in the league last year, and Spencer Pulley allowed the most of any center in the league. So literally anybody coming in would be an upgrade, but I think that Feeney could be much better in year 2. I think Mike Pouncey has the potential to return to form, and I love Forrest Lamp. He had the big injury that cost him his entire rookie season, but I think that he can be an incredible guard for this team. There's real potential that the interior of this offensive line is a supreme strength for them, which is going to open up everything. Inside run, it can obviously
totally
leave a cleaner pocket for Phillip Rivers. So I really, really like the outlook for that.
Totally agree. I think it could be much improved. I think they could be an offense that is able to control the ball really well this year. And I do like them to win the division. I'm going with the chalk on this one. The Chiefs are interesting, but it's all on the arm of Pat Mahomes, and I don't know that I'm in love with that, but I could still see them being a playoff team, but we'll get to them later. We're going to come back with Mo Moten. He's going to talk Raiders with us. We'll go around and learn the silver and black inside out next on Fantasy Sports Radio, Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be right back.